again, I'm still developing and thinking and putting pieces together.
Two-thirds are going to get killed off.
Right. And there's some in Jerusalem.
There's going to be a couple million of them.
Right. And there's some in Jerusalem, and they're going to flee. So you've got the 144,000 that are sealed, but also Jesus in Ezekiel, they pass under the shepherd's rod, so there's some are going to be eliminated. So I would guess there's a larger amount going down there, and some are not welcomed into the covenant, they don't, whatever, and they're rejected. And they're only men, because when they're 144,000, they don't know a woman. And so...
And they're sent all over the world to be his witnesses.
Okay, I'm going to say no.
No to that?
Because there's, even Walvoord from Dallas Theological Seminary says the same. And I taught that too. I've taught that before too, because you have the pre-trib rapture, and now there's no witnesses. Who's going to evangelize? Where's all these saved people go? 144,000 Jews get sealed right away, and they go off and evangelize the world. Solves that problem.
It's in a lot of novels that they do
that. Except there's no... They go down to Petra and hide. You've got your two witnesses, but they're in Jerusalem. Now, again, I'm just saying, I've got no verse, and I've got scholars like Dallas Theological Seminary that are themselves pre-trib that say that's a fiction. There's nowhere in the Bible it says you have to assume. Well, why are these 144,000 sealed? To evangelize the world. Well, the world's coming under wrath. They're coming under judgment. I mean, you've got the church is here. The church is gone. It's time for wrath. It's not time for evangelism. We just pulled the evangelists out. Now judgment's coming. So those, they're down there as a military. But there are Jews, let's say 100%, because two-thirds, it says half the city will be destroyed. And people will be taken into exile. And then when the mountain splits, Mount Olive splits, then people escape from Jerusalem. So even as it's falling, there's still going to be half the city remaining. I think that one-third and two-thirds, it says two-thirds will be destroyed and a third will be brought into the fire, into the testing. And that could be the Jews of the tribulation, or a lot of commentators, and I've, because that's in Zechariah, and I've taught it also this way, that's history. Two-thirds are going to be, and I'm going to preserve a remnant for myself, the Lord, a third that I'm going to bring into Daniel's 70th week. Two-thirds will be lost to history, and a third will be brought in. So that two-thirds and one-third can be a historical, or you could try to make it fit into the tribulation where there's two-thirds of the Jews are killed, like a Nazi type of thing, and a third are preserved, but then they're brought into the fire. And you think you're preserved to be brought into the Nazi camp. I don't know. And then I got confused because you got two-thirds and one-third, but then when Jesus comes to deliver the city, half the city's taken, and half the city then escapes out. Well, half and half, two-thirds and one-third, those numbers don't mix and putting them in the... Again, that's just my... I would say absolutely the 144,000 men are down at Petra. Absolutely, they're not evangelists.
And who is? Do you think that would stop? There would be none?
You do have the two witnesses that are...
Right, they're not there the whole time.
They're in Jerusalem. And again, now, I are they there in the beginning? And then they're there for 1,260 days, then they're killed, and then they're resurrected 3 days later. So are they there at the beginning? And then when the Antichrist, he executes them? Or do they appear when the Antichrist, because they're fighting the Antichrist. They're countering him. So there's no, in a sense, are the Jews opposing the Antichrist at the beginning? It's like, no, they've just signed a treaty with him. They think he's the Messiah. But you got these two guys running around, Elijah and Moses or whoever, or Enoch, and they're running around opposing the Antichrist. We're the only two Jews opposing the Antichrist because everybody else is like, it's the Messiah. So to have him there at the beginning and killed when he reveals himself doesn't match. But then to have him come up in the middle and then die at the end, well, then they're dying right before, right as Jesus is having this big march in Jerusalem and the coming of the Lord. They get killed the final moments, and then they're resurrected 3 days later. and the whole world watches, it's like something bigger is taking place than these guys floating up into heaven. It's Jesus has come back from heaven. So I don't know if it's at the beginning. What do you think? Are those two witnesses the first half or the second half? That seems to be the easy way. I mean, I think that's what I think. It just, it's too confusing.
It's a warning.
Right.
God always gives warnings.
Right.
But still, as far as evangelizing the world, then who is? Is it just totally stopped and nobody is?
That doesn't seem like the heart.
It doesn't. There has to be beyond just the two
just
witnesses.
Because
right, right.
Because there will be saints that will be killed.
Right.
That become believers.
But now I'm going to stop, because for me, that's not a problem, because I'm pre-trib. I'm pre-wrath. You know what I'm saying? Here's the 70th week. 7 years, halfway point. The 1,260, Jesus returns here. You've got the seals, and then that sixth seal, I think, is taking place right about here. And that sixth seal is where the sky goes dark, the sun disappears, and everyone runs and hides from him who sits on the throne, from the wrath of the Lamb. So they see something in the atmosphere. That's important, because Satan is currently active, I will say, in the atmosphere or in the second heaven. You've got heaven in heaven. You've got earth, the third heaven. And then you've got the second heaven, which is the sky, the air, the atmosphere.
He hasn't been kicked out.
And he still is ruling there. He will lose his place and be cast to heaven. And I think he loses his place and is cast to heaven when Jesus comes out of the third heaven and enters into the second heaven and is in the atmosphere. That's when the rulers and authorities are cast down. And that is where, in the sixth seal, the world says, "Hide us from him who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb," and they go and hide in caves. Now, here's one of those controversies or conflicts that I've resolved for myself, because here, when Jesus is marching, you know, I used to teach, and you can still hear it, I'm still online. Jesus comes back just like he left from the Mount of Olives. He goes up, he comes back and lands on the Mount of Olives, and it splits in two. Except now, I'm going to do more of it on Sunday. There are so many verses about Basra and the sheep being gathered, the Lord coming from Basra, that it's pretty clear the Lord returns somewhere in Edom, and then marches physically into Jerusalem like a military. With that being said, I think he's here and then is going to march to Jerusalem, well, from Basra. What was I saying?
We were talking about other witnesses during...
Oh, the church. Okay, that's chapter, the sixth seal. Then the seventh chapter. Chapter six ends... what I was going to say is they're all hiding from him and running to caves. Here, they're fighting. They're going to meet all the kings, meet at Armageddon, and then march down to Jerusalem. That's not hiding in caves. Here, when he appears, they're all hiding in caves. Here, they're all marching down to fight him, and they're aggressively going after him. So it's two different. This is fear and hiding. This is a regrouping in Armageddon and marching down. And what was my question? Oh, the witness.
Yes.
Chapter 6, and who can stand? It says, and who can stand? Because the Lord has appeared. And then chapter 7 gives you two groups. 144,000 are sealed, and so they're going to stand. And then it says, and then there was a large group standing before the throne of God on that sea of glass like you see in Ezekiel. They're standing there, and... you can't count them. And then the elder asked John, where have they come from? John says, you know. And he says, they have come out of the great tribulation. And now, if you're pre-trib, these guys are sealed right here and become witnesses because the church is gone. But here's the sixth seal. who are these guys? Those guys are martyrs. They've all died. Now, it doesn't say they're martyrs. It says they've come out of the Great Tribulation. And if you're a pre-trib rapturist, the only other way to get out of the tribulation is to either die or be killed. But if you go with the Lord appearing here and the church is raptured here, before the, this is where the wrath begins. The seals are not the wrath. Again, if you want to say they're the wrath, then they're the wrath. But the wrath begins, hide us from him who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. It begins right here. And so here's the wrath, not this. This is peace. When the world says peace, peace, look out. And so there are witnesses, the church, you and I, will be functioning, even if you're pre-trib. I'm a pre-trib believer. Well, I'm sorry, that's not going to happen. You're a witness here through the first five seals all the way up until the sixth seal. You're still on the earth. The church is still on the earth when the Antichrist reveals himself. And then at some point after that, the Lord appears in the sky and the church is removed and the wrath begins. We will not face the wrath. Everybody says that. This matter is the 7 years, the wrath of God, or is the trumpets and the bowls the wrath of God? And right here, the sixth seal, the world identifies the wrath is coming. And so here's your, we're witnesses for this time. And now at this point, definitely, you have had up until, oh, another thing that happens right here, three angels come out right here. This answers the question. And one of those angels comes out and proclaims in a loud voice for all the earth to hear the gospel, the eternal gospel. So the church, with my pre-wrath concept, and it's other people agree with it, not with me, but with this idea, the church, we don't have to worry about a witness. If you're pre-trib, you've got to have these guys be witnesses. If you're pre-wrath, we're not leaving until here. Then right after that, those angels come, and one of the angels goes to all the world with the gospel. It's like the Old Testament told you, Jesus came and told you, the church has been telling you, they're all gone, and now an angel comes out and proclaims the eternal gospel for everyone to hear. And then when he's done, it's like, okay, let's do it. And then you got the trumpets and the bowls are poured out. Okay, you don't have to agree with that. That's how I've resolved that.
But there will be believers who last through it all because they'll be part of Jesus' thousand-year millennial reign.
Right.
So, and they will have children. And
yep.
Yes. So we know that they become there. They still can become believers throughout the entire 7 years.
There'll be people becoming believers throughout this entire time.
Yes.
Now I'll push that even further. Potentially, at this point, if the rapture takes place, just like if the rapture took place here, all the believers are gone. 144,000. These 144,000 Jews will live into the millennium. They will not be martyred and raptured.
They're still humans.
They'll They'll go in with their physical bodies and have families. The Jews that flee out of Jerusalem, and the Lord will deliver them, they'll live into the millennium. And then in Armageddon, the armies of the world meet in Armageddon. And I just realized this, and I said it on Sunday. When they meet in Armageddon, the armies of the nations are not coming together to fight each other, like World War III. They're assembling in Armageddon to march south into Jerusalem. And thus, it's not the Battle of Armageddon, it's the assembly, it's the, what would you call it, the rendezvous at Armageddon. And then it's a series of campaigns. And I would think those who call on the name of the Lord will be saved. And I may be too open-minded here. And that's not, I mean, I'm not, that's, you know, it's not my style to be like open-minded. But I think at this point, when the Lord returns, there are going to be some people that, you know, their hearts are hardened. They're going to fight it. But what is assembled in Armageddon is the kings and their military, and they're the ones that are marching. Leaving back home families and children and, you know, all kinds of people that are just like watching the world fall apart. Well, when the Lord returns, those are all going to come into judgment. And I think there will be many people that become believers at that point. I don't. It could be, you know, the whole world is in darkness and you're done. But there could be right here people that have just, they're still open. Because they're going to, because it's not just these 144,000 Jews that are going to live in. There's going to be people around the world that are going to be, like you said, going to live into the millennium. And so I think if this is where the rapture takes place, and I don't know, if we can say 3 years left, 2.5 years left, I'm not sure how long it's going to be. Quicker the better, you know, to get out of here. There will be people born again, potentially there, but there may be some, well, especially when the angel proclaims the eternal gospel, there'll have to be a result. But even as these things start to unravel, people are going to be coming.
So is it when Jesus comes, he kind of offers peace to the world leaders, like Isaiah 63, he says, as a point, no one gives support.
Right, from in Isaiah 63, there's no one there to help me. That's him marching out of Edom, out of Bozrah. There's no one there to help him. He's coming with the 144,000, but none of the nations sided with him. It's him returning, and all the nations, military, are coming against him.
Does that mean he's not nice who he is or something like that?
I think the Jews will know who he is. So there's people there waiting for him. And again, there's interesting verses in Ezekiel where down there at Bozrah, they're being gathered like sheep, and some are being rejected. They've got to pass under the shepherd's staff. And so there's going to be some that aren't going to be accepted down there in Bozrah. Some Jews, they're going to be rejected, apparently. But the nations as a whole, the leadership, the kings, are all against him. They're united against him under the leadership of the Antichrist. I think there's going to be people in the world, if the rapture's here or the rapture's here whenever, that they're going to respond to either the church, to the two witnesses, to the angels that are proclaiming the gospel, or even as he returns. I don't know if I've got a verse that says...
Yeah, it's in Zechariah 14. It says, he will not, the Egyptians will not come and worship the king. There is no rain.
Right, good. Yes, chapter 14, where it talks about people are coming from all around. Right. So there is going to be... And they're not part of the church. They're not part of the Jews.
Yeah,
they're those families...
Remnant of the nations. After the war, they mentioned about... Remnant of the nations has to come and worship.
Right. So there's, and they've got to get saved. See, I think if you're pre-trib, the rapture takes place here. This answers that question. The 144,000, they go off and evangelize the world. Except the 144,000 go to Edom, and Jesus, Daniel, all say the vision. God takes them. The saint tries to destroy them, but God takes them into the wilderness. Daniel says, flee to Moab, Edom, and Ammon. Jesus says, go to the mountain. So everybody says, you guys, go high, and God will protect you. And so there's so many verses that these 144,000 are at Bozrah in Edom, going there, and we see them coming back, that to say, it's really, I think, sloppy teaching to say, well, they're evangelizing the world, only because you've got to figure out, how are we going to reach the world? Say, well, we can use this like a government program. Well, hey, here's 144,000 people just down here in Bozrah. We'll use those as evangelists. It's like, no, you can't. They're not. These are not evangelists.
But whenever the rapture happens, it's going to be a shock to those people. And there will be some that goes, oh, my goodness, so-and-so is right.
Right.
And then they can become believers.
Right.
So they will become witnesses then.
And again, if they're going to become worldwide Billy Grahams, or they're just going to tell their family. Yeah, there's not going to be, we're not going to lose the gospel. I mean, the gospel is going to maintain the message. And so I'm not sure that, I think there's definitely hardness of heart here. God is coming back in wrath to destroy, and there's no hope. But at the same time, his presence is going to draw some people in. I think.
Just like on the cross with the thief.
Right, right. Yeah, you're hanging on a cross dying, and what you're thinking about? remember me when you come into your kingdom. I mean, what, am I going to be, I'm a Christian, and when I'm dying, am I going to be thinking about entering the kingdom of God, or am I thinking about how miserable and painful, what am I thinking about? This thief was hanging on a cross dying, and he's thinking about the guy here. I think he's the Messiah. Remember me to come into your kingdom. Hey, that's some serious, contemplation.
Immediate, last minute, it can happen.
Right. So yeah, I think this is the wrath. But I think there'll be people, like Prim says, there's verses about people coming. We know they're going to live into the millennium. Again, one of the questions I've got, and we talked about it a little bit, is that world over here in that 1,000 years, I think Jesus ruling on the earth, he's a physical man, he's back in a resurrected body ruling and reigning.
In Jerusalem.
In Jerusalem. Right, not in heaven. He's here. And he's ruling the Jews, or the Jews are, they've got something set up. But then all of a sudden, now you throw this in there, it's like, oh wait, I'm here too. And I'm not like an American. I'm not one of the nations, because the nations are going to come and worship. Well, I'm not really an American anymore. I'm not a Jew. I'm a resurrected believer. I'm a member of the church. And so it's like, what am I, where do we go? Where do we fit in? What do you think about, I've got an answer. I read something. I got a little bit of answer. What do you think?
I believe we'll all be given a job somewhere in the world that we will help him. We'll help Jesus rule and reign.
Right.
And he's preparing us right now. What he gives us the work here to do is preparing us for that work then.
Yes. Yep. And there,
so
and there's going
to
be...
you'll need all the jobs that you have right now to help assist those people, to teach them. So when they come to the final end, that they
right.
don't join with Satan, because they'll have that opportunity again to help them stay believers.
Right, yeah.
And there'll be billions of people who are born in that thousands of
years. And we don't even understand what that's like. Yeah. Medicine will be different. Longevity will be different.
It will be somewhat like it is now, but it's not set up that Jesus.
There's two
the rules and laws will be fulfilled completely, because Jesus will, he'll be the ruler and reign, he'll demand that they be followed.
Ruling with an iron scepter.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And I think there'll be capital punishment.
Yes.
It's clear. He says you go out and see the dead bodies of those who rebelled against the Lord.
Everything that's in the Old Testament
right.
will happen.
And so there will be people that will, well, because people are going to be born, and they've got to come and recognize Christ, and some are going to reject him, even though he's sitting.
Yes.
It's not like they're going to say, well, I don't believe in Jesus. It's kind of like, I don't believe in Doc. It's like he's sitting right there. I'm just not going to listen to him. It's like, so it's not like, well, do you, so that becomes kind of weird. It's like, do you believe in Jesus? It's like, well, that's kind of a fanciful question. Like, you know, if you just convince him, give the guy enough evidence, and now you've got to believe. Here he is. I got a photograph of him.
It's not about his existence. It's about the truth. Like what he's saying is true.
Right.
Even the demons
believe.
So right.
Not
yeah.
Believing means he's telling the lies. Right?
So yeah. So they're going to have to agree. They're going to have to submit to the iron scepter rule, which I can't imagine it being difficult. I mean, if you want to live, if you want to live in peace, you want to live in productivity, submit to the Lord of Life and.
But there'll be those who choose not to. Just
right
now.
Right, and it's going to be a matter of. Their own will.
I have some hard time to apply. There is a scripture in Isaiah, it says, love will go out from Jerusalem. All nations will come and take it, and then go back and teach them.
Right. Right. They'll come in and then go back out. Yeah.
Yeah.
They'll come to, see, wisdom, knowledge, will knowledge of the Lord will fill the earth. And how that's going to happen is the Lord is in Jerusalem, teaching, and the nations will come, he will teach them, they'll come learn about his ways. I mean, it'd be like Elon Musk, you know, it's like learning, it's like, how do you do the government? How do you do the electrical? How do you do, well, here's, and it's not just going to be morality, that will be included, it's going to be, here's how you set up your finances, here's how you set up your shipping, here's how you set up your diet, here's, well, look at the law of Moses, it covers the whole range of things. And they'll go, oh my gosh, and they'll go back with that wisdom, the knowledge of the Lord. And it's not just knowledge, Jesus is Lord. That's the beginning of it. But it's like, the Creator here is now instructing us on how to live.
Yeah, that's a great point. It says in Zechariah 10, there are 10 Gentiles will come and take hold of him of a
Jew.
And they say, we heard that God is with you, let us go, something like that.
Right. And that's because of Jesus being back and instructing. And then, like you say, there's going to be jobs. And one group, there's a better word for this, divisions or something. One is going to be the Jews, and you know, the 12 tribes. And it's possible here, because the apostles will rule the 12 tribes. Remember that? So the Jews are going to have the apostles, resurrected apostles, ruling the 12 tribes of ruling Israel under Jesus. The second group would be, we will rule and reign with him. That's not Old Testament saints. That's church age. This would be the church, or again, that's a bad word because you think of mostly Methodists or the Catholics. Or it's like
Gentiles.
It's the believers. You know, it's us. And we will then, we'll rule the nations, or advise or do something. And just like the apostles will be over the nation of Israel, we, in some capacity, will be over all of the nations doing something as far as... And so in both cases, you've got resurrected apostles leading natural Israel. Here you've got resurrected Christians leading the natural nations. And that's...
Exciting.
Yeah, it is. And that's about as far as then you get into that. How is that going to look? And it's like...
We don't have to know everything.
No. And that's the thing. It's like we're talking about on Tuesday night or Monday night, the Old Testament prophets looking into trying to figure it out. It says, it's not for you to know. It's for somebody else. And we're looking at this, and it's like we understand so much more than the apostles or the prophets, not because we're smarter, better, faster, better people. It's because we're here. The Spirit of God has come into it, us, and we now understand. And it's like simple things where Isaiah would be like, how did that work? You know, where we're projecting into the future. When we get there, it's going to be like, you know, well, I'll be deleting all my, well, like it says in Zechariah, if at that time when the Lord is, if someone says, you're a prophet. It's like, no, I'm just a farmer. I'm not a prophet. They'll deny that they're a prophet. Or if a mother or father find that their child's a prophet, trying to pronounce, it's like they'll have him killed. It's kind of like me. When Jesus comes back and I've got all my Generation Word website is still functioning, it's like, oh my, delete. It's like, I'm sending out books and download my material. When he comes back, it's like, oh, I was so close, but not so, I was so far wrong. And he got like this much right. Yeah, exactly. It's going to be very exciting. And again, like we talked about last night, the reason this is important, and I stumbled on this last night from 1 Peter. The reason this is important is because this knowledge gives us hope. And because you have that hope produces holiness. This hope that we have because of this knowledge, it's like this changes. You have information, so you've got hope. And now that you've got hope, it's not like, okay, now I'm going to start living righteous. It's like, you don't like, okay, I'm going to live a righteous life. You're like, oh my gosh, this is real. And it's like you start living righteous, and then the next thing after hope comes a relationship with the one you're hoping in. And it says, be holy because I am holy. It's like, well, now you've got hope. You start living holiness. You meet the Lord. And oh my gosh, this is my, like I use the example of, you know, watching Michael Jordan or watching a businessman. It's like, if you admire Michael Jordan, I want to know everything about what does he eat, how does he train, and you are a businessman, what books are they reading? And be holy because that's who they are. Be like Michael because, and when you meet the Lord, you have a relationship. It's not like, well, got to be like the Lord now. It's like, oh no, that's my role model. What books are you reading? What are you eating? You know, how much time a day do you spend working out, whatever? And that's a relationship. And once you have that relationship, now that holiness becomes a lifestyle. And again, it's not a, well, I've got these 10 rules I always follow. It's like, no, I've got hope. So now I'm living holy. I meet the Lord. I'm copying Him. And now it's my lifestyle. And it's not like you've got to tell me these are the 10 things you do. It's like, no, this is how I live my life. And so that's why all this, some people would call this immaterial, too deep, confusing, don't need to go there. It's like, all of this provides me with insight. Well, it provides me with knowledge or insight, which creates an anticipation, a hope, a reality. And I guarantee you, now we're off subject, but I thought this for 40, 50 years. I'm not sure how long it's been. I'll say 40. 50 seems like a long time. The church, the believers, what they're missing is knowledge, is this information. If you get this information, it's going to lead you to hope. And I used the example last night. I'm sorry, I'm re-preaching last night. It's like you look at your kids, and you're a father, and your kids just look weak. It's like, man, you know, they need some like food or something. So what you do, you say, you put pictures of food up around the house, and you stencil on the wall, food. And you stencil really fancy Italian spaghetti. And it's like naming your church Hope. And a ministry is Hope Ministries. And telling people, have hope. You need hope. Keep hoping. It's like, that's like putting pictures of food around your house. It's like your kids, it's like, I'm not sure what's wrong with them. I keep putting pictures of food in my house. I'm right stenciling spaghetti all across the walls. And my kids just seem weak and anemic. Well, you haven't given them any food. You don't have to tell them, eat food. If they're hungry, you feed them food, and all of a sudden, they come back to life. And the same thing, you don't need to name your church Hope. You don't need to tell people, have hope. You need to give them food. And the natural result of having this knowledge, this information is, I've got hope. And when you've got hope, you're going to be like, oh my gosh, this is real. You're going to be like, my life is changing. You're becoming like Christ. You meet Him. And so again, this whole thing comes back to knowledge. And it's not that Gnostic, you know, it's not that secret knowledge, what's behind the numbers and what does this mean. It's like, it's the truth, it's truth. And Jesus said Himself, truth will set you free. It's like, truth is not going to lead you into religion and bondage and all these rituals. It's going to set you free. Also, it's like, I feel so much better now that I ate supper. What'd you do? I don't know, I stopped looking at pictures of food and stopped talking, saying, boy, you know, look at the food. Okay.
So before you erase that, I'm just seeing like hope and knowledge on the wall like you just described, but I don't see any scripture that backs up that second group being part of the millennium. What scripture do you use
church?
That says that they will be part of the millennium?
The Christians.
Right.
It
They're
says
resurrected.
It talks about we will rule and reign with Him.
Yeah, I just always read where in, you know, the millennium part, the people that get to be headed, and they will come back.
Oh,
and
right.
They will rule with Him.
Right.
I never was real crazy about being beheaded, but I always did want to be part of the millennium. But I don't see the specific scripture.
I'd have to do some work with it. I'm looking at Timothy. Chapter 2 Timothy chapter, again, this is just off the top of my head. Okay.
So
I mean, yeah, you are correct. Yeah, this right here, this looks cool.
Yeah,
But wait. So is the 144,000 solves the problem. They're evangelists.
Right. Yeah, if you were a Jehovah's Witnesses, you might be one of those 144,000.
Yeah, ask me a question, I'll come up with an answer. It's like, okay, right.
Yeah.
Give me some Bible verses. Yeah. So I've given you an answer, but now it's like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'm in first just off the top of my head. It's clear when Jesus says to the apostles, you that have followed me, you will rule the 12 tribes of Israel. So that's if that's a literal statement. Okay, that's just the beginning. And the foundations of the city are the apostles. Okay, I'm in chapter 2 of 2 Timothy, Verse 11, here is a trustworthy saying. If we died with him, we will also live with him. If we endure, we will also reign with him. Now again, that can be pretty broad. What does it mean? I mean, that can be a broad statement. If we disown him, he will also disown us. If we are faithless, again, this is a tough verse, he will remain faithful, for he cannot disown himself. But the main point right there is that if we endure, if we are doing our work here, if we're faithful enduring here, we will also reign with him. We know the verse that the people, Paul gets upset with the Corinthians because they can't make decisions. They're going to the worldly courts and they're suing each other. And he says, don't you have the, you know, wise men among you that you can solve these problems yourself? He says, do you not know that we will judge angels? If what I'm saying is true right here, it should be easy to find support for it. 1 Corinthians 6, 2. Yeah, here it is. Chapter 6. It's titled in my NIV Bible, the NIV puts a title over chapter 6, Lawsuits Among Believers. And a lawsuit would be, like if me and Steve have a conflict, we don't resolve it together. We go to a court system. Now again, I think if it's illegal, if you know, Steve built a shed on my property, I'm going to go to the court system. I'm not going to, I mean, I'd start with this Christian brother. But there are some things, I think, in our culture that you need a court for. But this is the idea that they're having trouble within their community, and Paul's mocking them right here because they won't solve it themselves. Chapter 6, verse 1. If any of you has a dispute, and that is a technical term for a lawsuit or legal action. It doesn't just mean, you know, you took my potato salad bowl home after the potluck and I want it back. Although I guess that could be legal action. If any of you has a dispute with another, dare he take it before the ungodly for judgment instead of before the saints? Again, that would mean the world instead of the church. Do you not know that the saints will judge the world? And if you are to judge the world, are you not competent to judge trivial cases? So that puts it over here. That would be one of those verses over here. The saints are going to judge the world. Now, we're not going to be doing, when Jesus comes back to judge the wicked and the dead, we're not going to be evaluating people for heaven or hell. Or we're going to, that's going to be in, I think, the system, the millennium. We're not judging the world today. And we're not going to be the final judge like Jesus is. When do we judge the world? I think it's going to be when the world is functioning, the millennial kingdom. Do you not, verse 3, do you not know that we will judge angels? Again, the idea there is like things are going to change. Right now we don't even see angels, but the day is coming where we are going to be, we're seated with Christ in heavenly places. Now we're seated at the right hand of God, but that's going to, the sons of God will be revealed and we will judge the nations, we will judge angels. How much more the things of this life? Therefore, if you have disputes about such matters, appoint as judges even men of little account in the church. I say this to shame you. Is it possible that there's nobody among you wise enough to judge a dispute between believers? But instead, one brother goes to law against another, and this in front of the unbelievers. The very fact that you have lawsuits among you means that you've totally, completely been defeated already. You're already unfaithful. You can't even solve it. So those are two verses about judging. I mean, give me some feedback.
Well, there's a little bit of technicalities. Like if we had been raptured, then we have new bodies, so we're going to come back and live in the millennium in our new bodies, but we will be with other non-new body humans. I mean,
this has been a problem for this is that that is a problem for that's a that's
technicality
a
technicality that
technicality, and I resolve that in a couple of ways. One, when Jesus was resurrected, he appeared, talked with them, interacted, ate with them. Now, he was on a different plane. He would walk out. And again, well, that was the Lord. But I think the only example that we have of a resurrected person in a body on the earth is Jesus when he came out of the grave. And he appeared, and no one had trouble when he appeared. They go like, okay, wait, Jesus, you're losing focus again. You're getting ghost-like again. It's like, oh, you're doing that translucent thing again. I mean, it's like, they talk to him like, you know, like I can see you, you can see me. It's not like, wait, you're thinking about something else. And if you're thinking about Galilee, all of a sudden you start, oh, I'm drifting into Galilee. You're only part here and part there. There's no indication that they had any, that they even recognized that he was a resurrected person. I mean,
true. He's on the road to Nazareth.
Right. Yeah. And with Mary, you know, grabbing his feet and Thomas looking at him and you know, so yeah. If it was a, for, again, I agree with you. It's a problem for me because when I'm in this body, but when I come back and I'm in a physically resurrected body, it's like, and I can travel at the speed of thought. I can travel through walls. It's like, can you even see me? Does anybody see me? It's like, it appears it's like, it's not that different. I mean, it's different, but it's like, and so our example is, and John says, when he appears, we'll see him as he is because we'll be like him. And so our only example is how Jesus looked is how we will look. And he was with them for 40 days. He went fishing with them. He made them fish. He cooked fish for them. He traveled with them. He taught them for 40 days. And then he floated up to heaven. And there isn't, I don't think of there any example that it was weird for them other than the fact that he scared them a couple times, popping in the room or, you know, walked out the door. So, I mean, no, I agree with you. Because this is what I came up with, because I was asking that very question a week or 2 weeks ago, not doubting it, but it's like, how can, you've got 144,000 Jews marching in, setting up the kingdom, and now we come back, it's like, guess what, we're back. It's like, oh, wait, we didn't know you're going to be doing this. We thought we were going to be like on clouds playing harps or, you know, I know it's not going to be that, but I was expecting more, something more resurrectory, you know, some kind of like Easter morning type stuff than business.
But that's all kind of elusive too, whereas when you start talking about him coming back physically, that does something. I like that. I like that, and I like the thought of being in the millennium and ruling him. I just don't, there's really not anything concrete,
right.
But I do see some of the things.
Well,
that
you do saying. Okay, you do see the apostles.
Yeah.
She makes a pretty clear statement, if you allow it to be, you'll rule when you'll rule the 12 tribes.
Yeah, and I believe there will be people ruling.
Right.
I just didn't know about the resurrection.
And you've got that verse about those that were beheaded. They'll
yes,
come back
yes.
and
they
they'll rule. So you have no trouble with the apostles
it
ruling.
It says it very clearly.
And they have trouble. It's like, where's our verse?
Exactly.
It's like, where are
exactly.
we at?
Exactly.
And one of the things is, and this is one of the things as I it just floated through my mind, I don't like it. I mean, it sounds good and Christian-y, you know, and we'll be with the Lord forever. It's like, what? What do you mean? Well, wherever the Lord is, you're just right there. It's just praise and worship all day long. It's like, what do you mean? It's like, well, you know, he's there on the throne. They got the Jews are doing this down here. The martyred that got their heads cut off in the tribulation, they're ruling over here, but you accepted Christ during the church age, so you're just up here in your white robe, and you just, and it's like, sing it one more time, back the chorus. Now it's like, oh my gosh, I mean, like, is this? It's like, it's. I mean, I'm bummed out. Now, again, this is better than, you know, being martyred and dying on a cross, but it's like, really, I mean, how, what year is it? You know, we're just still around the throne of God, just rejoicing. Well, you're gonna be, it's gonna be like really happy all the time. It's like, I don't know. I've been on vacation for a while, and it's like after 2 or 3 days, it's like I need to like do something. And again, so I think there's some happy medium between, or truth between, just being with the Lord. You know, while we're just here worshiping God. Yeah, we're happy. Yeah, boy, great time here in heaven. And really wishing, you know.
I'm sure we would be. I mean, sure, there will be whatever we need. We'll be. I come to the conclusion of that, but
right.
I have always been kind of envious of the beheaded people who they do say they will be in the millennium.
Right. And I think that very thing that speaks to the issue right there, mm-hmm. is you're looking for some, your hands on, well, we're men.
Yeah.
You know, mankind's created to do something, you know, build, be involved. We're not created to be just passive, you know, insects.
And I don't see the millennium as being the way it's supposed to be, and you want to be a part of that because we've been a part of the way it's not supposed to be.
Right.
And we've seen that, so we want to have that experience of the way God meant it to be.
Right. Right.
On earth.
Exactly.
Yes.
Right. Right.
There's that in us, so I
there is that concept of going full circle of like going back to Eden, but this time you can't sin.
Right.
I mean, now you're in the Garden of Eden again, but this time you've gone full circle and now you can't sin. And there's no devil. He's locked up.
But he's going to be loose again, so there will be those who can't sin.
And now you've got that. Now that's another question. Is he releases Satan. And what's the difference between the thousand-year millennium and the eternal state? The thousand-year millennium is on this earth, and then Satan's released. Gog and Magog happens again. Fire consumes him out of heaven. And then now there's a new heaven and a new earth. It's like... Now, does that mean everything disappears and God recreates the universe? Now, that's a trip.
It says everything melts.
Right. The elements will melt in the heat.
Everything will be...
And that's what I go with. That's my initial reading, is there's going to be a brand new heaven, new earth. Some scholars talk about that as a cleansing. It's like, because the idea is God created this earth and that he created this universe. And he's going to recreate it. Just like everything has got to be careful, well, I'm going to say born again. Everything's got to be renewed. Jesus is the first born again, first one from the dead. Now we're born again spiritually, but we have to be recreated new. And then we'll live in the millennium for 1,000 years, and then this earth has to be created new. Now, when I got born again, he didn't dissolve me and make another Galen. He took Galen and put him through a process, and I was reborn. I'm still Galen, but I was born again. I'm prepared for the new creation. Now, the new creation is not here, but I'm a new creature being prepared for the new creation. Jesus was the first one. We're second, but we're waiting for our new heaven and new earth. And is that new heaven and new earth the millennium? I don't think so. I think that that's the millennium, because that ends with Satan being released again. So if Satan's prowling around at the end, it can't be the new heaven and new earth. Then after that, 1,000 years, then there's a new heaven and new earth. Now, is that a total dissolving of the universe? I mean, of my universe? I was created for this universe. I was created from this universe. That's all going to disappear. He's going to say, okay, that got screwed up. We're going to make a new one. Just like me, I got screwed up. He said, I'm going to make a new one. No, he caused me to be born again. Is he going to, with that melting of the heat, is that just a born again process that we're going to now just, from the millennium, just continue into the new heaven and new earth, which is the same universe, just born again?
There won't be any sun and moon, because God himself
gives
light.
Right. And that I wonder about. That, yeah, you can see that right there. And now the Lord is the light. Once again, it's something we don't understand scientifically. We're not there yet. But I also, again, I'm not disagreeing with you. But on that sixth seal, for example, the sixth seal, if you read about it, it's cataclysmic. I mean, the sun disappears, the stars don't shine. It's like there's everything's gone. The universe is gone. And it used to always bother me because it's like, wait. We've still got the trumpets and the bowls to go, and Jesus hasn't even come back yet. And the whole universe is just receding like a scroll. Where'd everything go? What happens there, again, you understand what I'm saying? I mean, right here, the sixth seal, it's all gone. It's like the second coming. It sounds like and that's where people do the cyclicer. You've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 seals. Then you come back and have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 trumpets. And then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 bowls. And it's just the same thing repeated over and over again. And that's fair, except it appears to be like the seventh trumpet or seventh bowl leads into the seven trumpets, the seventh trumpet leads into seven bowls. But what happens here is the universe is Jesus appears in the sky, and his glory is so brilliant that the sun disappears, the moon doesn't give its light. It's like, well, it's like right now. During, if you go outside during the day, the stars have disappeared. Why? Well, because the sun is in the sky. And now the Lord is going to come back and everything's going to be gone, not disappeared and gone forever, but you just don't see it because of his presence. And I think that's how I explain the sixth seal. You understand what I'm saying? That's how I explain the sixth seal. So could that be something possible when it says there'll be no need for this? Is the earth just this ball floating around in, you know, some kind of cyberspace? Or is it still a functioning universe? You just don't need the light of the sun because the Lord is your light here on the earth. So, I mean, there's that idea of, is it all going to change, or is his presence going to change the function or the need for certain things?
It also says there will be no oceans. So there's no hydrological cycle, there's no plate tectonics, there's no there. Something is totally different.
Right.
From what it was.
Now, the oceans, what that means that there's no, yeah. Some say the oceans represent chaos, you know.
Yeah.
I think the oceans, because in Revelation, they stop working. The oceans, the sea, is the purification system for the earth. If there was no ocean, I mean, extinction would be soon. And so, because there's no sin, there's no decline, there's no decay, there's no need for a salt sea cleansing purification system. Now, does that mean there's no water? I mean, I don't, yeah. So it does talk about there's no sea, there's no water. Or does it say water? I'm not teaching, I'm thinking. It's like, what's he talking? He sounds like he's confused. Yes, yes, you're getting it. Yes, exactly. Because there's water coming out of the Temple Mount, and it's a stream flowing, and in the millennium at least, it flows into the Dead Sea, and apparently flows down to Aquaba, and then fills up, you know, there's no Dead Sea any longer because you've got fresh water. And in the millennium, Jerusalem becomes a seaport city. It's got a, they can come up the Dead Sea, come in the Mediterranean Sea, and sail right into Jerusalem. But then, that's the millennium, not the new heaven and new earth. I'm going to look at the clock. It just has that funny feeling. It's that 8 o'clock feeling's coming.
This always kind of reminds me of a baby in the womb. They have no clue.
Oh, right.
What they're going to come out, what's coming next. I mean, they've got some hints because they can hear things.
Right, yeah.
But they don't have a clue. I think that's where we are.
Yeah, I think so. That's why I'm talking. And I think as soon as it starts to happen, we're deleting all this teaching. It's like, oh, no, I was a shop teacher. I was never a Bible teacher. I was a shop teacher. No. You got me mixed up with somebody else. I just believe and trust in the Lord. Well, hey, I will pray. And, okay, two things. One, we've got notes for next week. Now, I just want you to know, this causes problems for some people online, like in Texas and stuff, because they'll email me. They'll say, where's your class? And I'll say, well, we got off subject. And so they'll say, well, then we'll do something different. Because they wait for this to come up. And then the couple people print the notes and read the notes. And then they watch the video and they facilitate the class. So they watch this video. Now there won't be one. And so they're going to be like, you know, typing, where's this at? And I thought it'd be fine because it's Thanksgiving week and they may not have class this week. But they will next week, so they'll just use this class next week. Except, you see the top note right there on that, no class next week. And the reason for that is I might be able to pull it off, but Tyler has his play, and he's got three, maybe four lines in his play. He's not got the lead part, he's gonna sit at the lunch table with three other people, and they're playing poker during lunch. And he's got three lines. I don't think he knows anything about poker. If it was chess, he could keep up with it. He's saying things about poker. He's like, do you know what that means? No. It's just a line, he says. But anyway, so it's 5:30 next Tuesday night, and it's important. He's asked me several times, "Are you going to be there?" And, you know, so I'm going to be there. We practice his lines. I know what he's going to say. I can watch a videotape, but I'm going to be there. So there's no class next week, and I'll put that out. And we'll use these notes next week. So keep the notes, but remember there's no class next week. But when you come back next week, cross that off, because there will be class the week after. You just always be like, "Hey, look, there's never going to be class again." All right. Thank you. Thank you for your question. Thank you for your patience. No, I know, but it is. It is. And yeah. And I've often wondered about doing, just having a night like this. You know, like have like Bible class where, you know, kind of come in and it's like, open it up. I bet, you know. Okay, I'll pray. And we'll go. Father, we do thank you for the opportunity to be together. We thank you for the word that you've revealed to us and that we have your spirit. We do thank you that this information does encourage us to have hope, that gives us something to look forward to trust in, even as things deteriorate on this side of history. We know there's something better coming. And Father, we do want to be like you and live a life that is pleasing to you at this time. Not so much to receive the rewards, although that's part of it, but because we want to be like you and live like you and do the things you've called us to. Again, we thank you for this opportunity. In Jesus' name, amen. Hey, thank you very much for being here. Thank you for enduring, asking questions. Those are all good questions.
You know, and you were talking about using Michael Jordan.
Right.
First thing that entered my mind was any kind of mentor.
Oh.
You will do anything to please your mentor, and you want to be just like him.
Right.
Because he will show you the shortcuts. But you don't have to have the stumbling blocks that he had.
Right. Yeah, he's the pioneer. Like Jesus is the pioneer. He's gone before. Here's how I did it. It's like, show me how you did it. Yeah. Yeah, so that whole, for me, that helped me, you know, like even I saw it last night, because holiness is like, well, I better be holy. And so I what does that look like? Well, you do this and stand like this. And it's like, no. Be holy like I'm holy. What's Jesus doing? Like if, like I said, you know, if you're, not to misuse the word holiness, but if I'm going to try to be like Michael Jordan, then being holy would be being like Mike. It's not like how I stand or how, it's like, or like the mentor. What does the mentor do? Be holy like the mentor. Be like he is.
Or your grandfather.